Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
I just want to grow food for people. I just fills a very deep need that I have. So I would be doing this anyway. So it's great that I have people to do it for.
Candace Minster is the garden manager at the White Violet Center for Eco-Justice, a ministry of the Sisters of Providence at St. Mary of the Woods in Indiana. She shows us around the gardens and introduces us to the alpacas. The Midwest might have a new energy crop if only farmers would grow it. What could be part of the culprit for the mass bee deaths across the U.S.? Harvest Public Media brings us stories from Iowa's cornfields. And Chef Daniel Orr takes advantage of some fresh berries. We have a recipe for an amazing dessert for you. News from across the food world. Lou Ann Johnson with the latest.
The power of Yelp reviewers should not be underestimated. New York City health officials found hundreds of unreported outbreaks during a recent pilot project by crunching the site's reviews, winnowing out keywords like vomit and diarrhea, and contacting the users directly by email. The results were alarming. Out of the 468 posts the team found about food sickness, only 3% of the cases had been reported via hotlines and other traditional means. Heather Hansen, a co-author of the study who works for the city's health department, said the team launched the pilot after stumbling on Yelp as a new source for investigations. Since the reviews and contact information are public, Yelp happily gave the team a direct feed of reviews in the city. City officials contacted the reviewers, visited the restaurants, and were even able to track down sources of contamination, like bare-hand food handling and spoiled produce spawning disease in refrigerators. NPR reported this week on a study that found soda tax could indeed deter soda consumption. Researchers calculated that the equivalent to a 6-cent tax per 12-ounce soda would lead Americans to consume about 5,800 fewer calories from sugary drinks per year. They analyzed supermarket sales data to understand how price fluctuations influence consumer purchases. Then they modeled how various forms of taxing would change decision-making. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the National Institutes of Health funded the study. And Panera announced its plans to do away with artificial additives in its food by 2016. By artificial additives, the casual dining chain means artificial colors, flavors, sweeteners, and preservatives. Michael Jacobson of the Centers for Science in the Public Interest is unconvinced. In an email to CBS Money Watch, he said if Panera really wanted to promote its customers' health, it would cut the salt, sugar, and saturated fat in many of its products. Find links to read more about these stories at eartheats.org.
Hop on Twitter to connect with us 24/7. We post news stories like these, recipes, and photos. Find us at Earth Eats. Miscanthus. It could be the Midwest's next energy crop, a relative of sugar cane that looks like bamboo. But in a region dominated by corn and soybeans, it has yet to catch on. For Harvest Public Media, Rick Fredrickson reports from Iowa.
It sounds like a spelling bee. Miscanthus. M-I-S-C-A-N-T-H-U-S. Miscanthus.
When I look at a crop like this, I see a chance to make fossil fuels cleaner.
Emily Heaton has been called the Miscanthus Queen, an agronomist who's been working with a stocky perennial at Iowa State University.
Because what we're talking about doing is blending this very clean, grassy biomass with coal. So it just cleans up coal a little bit.
This field of Miscanthus is about 6 to 10 feet tall. It's native to Southeast Asia. It would remind Vietnam veterans of something they called elephant grass, tall enough for the enemy to hide in. So that was destroyed with Agent Orange. Assistant scientist Nick Borsma recently harvested an ISU test plot north of Ames, Iowa.
We're going to be using an old 60s-era flail chopper to do the cutting.
What kind of bales are you going to make?
They're 4x4-foot round bales, and they're probably going to range from 300 to 500 pounds each.
Miscanthus is the king of biomass fiber. An acre can yield 15 tons. Plant this perennial once, and it keeps on giving for up to 20 years, with limited chemicals necessary. Iowa's total crop is a mere 50 acres or so. Steve Schomburg has the state's largest miscanthus farm in Muscatine County.
Miscanthus is such a new crop that we are the first 16 acres to be planted in Iowa. It gets gawkers, yes. People stop along the road and talk to me about it. What are you growing there?
Schomburg's crop will be mixed with coal and turned into steam and electricity at the University of Iowa's power plant. They already know miscanthus is a viable fuel. It's fairly common in Europe. The key challenge, according to the campus utilities principal engineer Furman Milster, is the absence of a biomass market.
It's not like a commodities market like coal or natural gas or oil. But I think over given time and continued movement toward a more sustainable energy source, we will see biomass develop and continue to look more like a commodity.
As a component in the school's renewable energy plan, the university recently planted 13 more acres of miscanthus and is recruiting Iowa farmers to have 2,500 acres in production by the end of 2016. In Illinois, grain farmer Eric Rund is promoting it as a heating fuel on the farm instead of using liquid propane, or LP. Small furnaces are already being imported.
Taking a page out of what farmers in Austria and Germany are doing, they are growing the miscanthus, and then they burn that to heat their homes and livestock buildings and greenhouses and so forth for half of what you could with LP.
Rund recently got $85 a ton from a turkey farm that uses miscanthus chips for bedding. He expects it to be his most profitable crop. According to Travis Hedrick at Reprieve Renewables, commercial production of miscanthus is now limited in the Midwest, but it's gaining interest.
This year, our 2014 Trailblazer program, we've propagated over 1,000 acres in North Carolina, Mississippi, Iowa, and Wisconsin.
I always joke that I'm a soybean agronomist in the 1930s.
Researcher Emily Heaton reminds us that at one time, soybeans were a novel crop that seemingly appeared from nowhere.
So how many acres of soybeans did we have in Iowa in the 1930s? You know, tens to hundreds, right? Soybeans were a crazy plant from Asia. Miscanthus is kind of a crazy plant from Asia. And I imagine that in 10 years, it's not unreasonable to think that we would have this on thousands of acres in the state at least, and millions in the future.
The small miscanthus harvest goes mostly unnoticed for now. Perhaps the tall grass is most visible in urban areas, where an ornamental variety is an attractive accent used in landscaping. For Harvest Public Media, I'm Rick Fredrickson.
In the second half of our show, another story from Harvest Public Media about how corn dust could be contributing to bee deaths across the country. There's a special place in West Central Indiana at which we'll spend much of today's show. It's the White Violet Center for Eco Justice at St. Mary of the Woods. They grow food using organic practices. They are an educational facility for new growers. They have alpacas, and they've been doing this since the mid-1990s. The entire St. Mary of the Woods campus is about 1,200 acres, but the garden is only about 5 acres. Trust me, they do use it to its full potential.
You could think of this like preschool. So the greenhouse is the nursery school, I suppose you could say. And then preschool is where they go before they're ready to head out into the big world of the field.
That's Candace Minster, the garden manager and fiber projects coordinator for White Violet Center. She's also a new mom, which is maybe the root of that analogy. She's showing me around the cold frame. They also have a greenhouse and a passive solar high tunnel, all of which let them do four-season growing. Minster went to school at Indiana University, making her own major in ecology and religion. Her interest in food justice naturally grew out of that.
I just want to grow food for people. Something that just fills a very deep need that I have. So I would be doing this anyway. So it's great that I have people to do it for.
The gardens provide food for the two kitchens on the St. Mary of the Woods campus. Last year, they donated 3% of their harvest to area food banks, and they also have a CSA program, which they hope will top 100 shareholders this year. There are six interns working at the White Violet Center, two of whom are inside washing the first harvest of the gourmet lettuce mix.
This is the spinner. I'm not sure if it has a technical name, but for me, it's the spinner.
It's and the chef master.
Chef master. It does have a technical name. I feel so bad for it now. And it's just going to spin the water that has been collecting. We shake it, give a good spin, so it'll get all the excess water off of it. It's going to make a lot of noise.
Let's do it.
And it's fun.
Oh, my God.
Ta-da! Dry, happy lettuce.
Tara Elmore and her husband, John Michael Elmore, discovered an interest in growing food on their failed attempt to walk across the country. They started in New Jersey, decided they were done in the middle of Illinois, fixed up a car, and then drove the rest of the way. They ended up meeting a lot of farmers during their journey.
That's where we had to stay usually. We had a tent and we had a push cart, and that was it. We didn't have a support vehicle, so we just kind of relied on the kindness of strangers. And so a lot of times we would find a farm that maybe had a little bit of yard there, and we would just knock on the door and ask them, you know, you mind if we set up shop? And they're always really, really welcoming people, really, really open people. They were so proud of the work that they were doing. So we just started developing this love for that situation, that lifestyle. But, you know, coming back from the travels, rather than just buy 10, 20, 30 acres and jump right in, we said, well, let's make sure that we know what we're getting into. So we found out about the internship here at the White Violet Center.
When I chatted with them, they'd only been on the job for a couple months. They hope to stick it out for the entire year. Lettuce cleaned by the Elmores will be available for purchase at the first day of the Terre Haute Farmers Market today. We'll continue our tour of the White Violet Center with Candace Minster in the second half of our show. Chef Daniel Orr in the kitchen for us here at Earth Eats. Check out this summer berry grunt with ginger and lemon.
So what we're going to do is we have a nice heavy bottom pan that we can also transfer to the oven if we choose later. We're going to add our sugar. We have about a cup of sugar. Okay, we're going to add a little bit of cinnamon. We have our flour, which add that again is going to be the thickener, and that's going to be about 3/4 of a cup. Okay, to this I'm going to add some Earth Eat types of flavors. We have some ginger here. Again, we love to take old-fashioned recipes and update them. I'm adding some lemon thyme. We have some lemon zest. We're going to start stirring this together. Okay, you can see the flour starting to do its job. It's starting to thicken up. And we're going to cook this again until it starts to grunt. What that means is that the flour will start to absorb these flavors and will start to bubble and spit at you a little bit. It's really a fast dish to make. So if you're in a hurry, it's much faster than even making a cobbler because you're making this filling right in the pan. Okay, there's several different ways you could finish it. You can finish it right on the stovetop by putting a cover on it and just letting it kind of steam there. Or you can take the whole thing and put it in the oven and bake it more like a traditional cobbler. Okay, now we're going to make the dumpling topping. So we've got our flour, sugar, a little baking powder. Okay, and to this we're going to add our butter. Okay, and we're going to mix the butter in until, just like if you're making a biscuit, until it starts to be about pea-sized pieces. Okay, and then we'll add the buttermilk. And we want this to be a fairly loose topping, so it'll be a little looser than a traditional biscuit dough. You see how it's getting nice and thick? Okay, I'm going to drop my little dumplings in here. And just about a tablespoon each one. Okay, at this point I'm also going to turn the heat down a little bit. And I'm going to go ahead and finish this in the oven. You can do it on the stovetop covered, and you'll have a nice moist dumpling where I like to get a little crisp on top. And I'm just going to take the whole dish back there and pop it in the oven. Today I'm going to be serving this with some Hoosier sweet corn ice cream. But you could do it with vanilla ice cream, just with some yogurt or a little bit of sour cream would also be wonderful with the grunt. So it's a quick, fast, easy recipe you can make every night of the week if you'd like. Whatever fruit's in season, peaches, pears, apples, you can make a grunt just about of anything. So enjoy.
This is a good one. Check out the recipe at eartheats.org. Coming up...
The corn dust could be having an impact on some hives in some situations. It's not explaining the whole collapse of the beekeeping industry.
A story from Harvest Public Media about another possible reason for mass bee deaths in the U.S. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street. BloomingFoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. At the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness, massage and yoga. More at touchstonewellness.com. And Bloomington Hypnosis, with certified hypnotist and self-hypnosis instructor John Hunkler, helping clients relax into weight loss for health and fitness. Bloomington Hypnosis, 812-200-5005. Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan.
Just be careful where you step. The row covers can get caught up on your feet.
Candace Minster is showing me around the 5 acres of gardens at the White Violet Center for Eco Justice. The floating row cover is protecting the crops from insects and excess light. It also helps to cool down the crops during the hot days. We're inside one of their Gothic-style high tunnels, which is 15 feet tall at its peak.
It seems excessively high for things like lettuce that grow low, but in the height of the summertime, it helps to pass some of the heat out of here and get it away from close to the plants. And then the sides also roll up. And so in the height of the summer, when it's pretty toasty, then we will have the sides rolled up, the big bay doors are both open, and we want as much airflow in here as we can get.
There can be as much as a 20-degree difference from outside to inside this high tunnel. I visited Minster and her gardening crew in early May, so spring crops like greens and carrots were at their peak. So let's just peer on inside. I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. About 10 rows of greens that are looking really healthy.
Yes. So right now, everything that's in here was planted anew in the late part of the winter.
See these gorgeous carrots over there in that bin. Those must be so sweet and delicious.
Yes, they're really nice. Carrots this time of year tend to be pretty brittle, and which means they have a really nice crunchy texture. They're not woody.
Brittle is a good thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, it makes it tricky for harvesting, but it is a good thing.
Then you can get some snacks as you're harvesting,
that's
though.
That's right. Yeah, I joke around that we usually eat the dregs, you know, the broken carrots and things like that. They're so good, but they're just not pretty enough to sell.
The two women harvesting crops today didn't do any snacking while I was there, but they did admit there is plenty of taste testing that goes on. They're armed with pairs of scissors, snipping outer leaves of the Russian kale plants. This is work made for young knees.
Yeah, it's good when you're like squatted down, you stand up. You squat and you stand.
Ann Testa works in the gardens, which is a very different scene from her former jobs.
I worked in Chicago. I was a sous chef at Cafe Absinthe in Wicker Park, and I was a sous chef at Pastiche up in Uptown in Chicago.
You can't imagine the noise and the stress of a professional kitchen when you're in this high tunnel. It's so calm, you don't even hear street noise. There's just the rush of the wind and the occasional snip of the scissors. Testa has now worked on two ends of the food chain, the cooking, now the growing. She prefers what she's doing now.
It's the product. It's like very pure. You don't add anything to it, and it's just delicious as it is. Which I kind of, the older I get, the more simple I want things.
Ann Testa was harvesting kale to go to their community-supported agriculture members. Coming up in about 5 minutes, have you ever met an alpaca? The White Violet Center has 40 of them. Honeybee colonies have been dying off at alarming rates in recent years. In the Midwest, some people wonder if planting row after row of corn and soybeans may be part of the problem. Researchers in Iowa are trying to find out. Harvest Public Media's Amy Mayer reports on one factor that may contribute to the grim situation for pollinators in the Corn Belt.
So I need to close the pollen traps on these bees.
Farmer Nathan Anderson layers on a thick brown hoodie, long sturdy yellow gloves, and a beekeeper's hat with a screened veil. He approaches a pair of hives sitting on the edge of a field recently planted with corn.
That's where, as the bees are forced through those small openings, it brushes some of the pollen off.
Anderson is not a beekeeper. The hives belong to researchers at Iowa State University. They'll come here to Cherokee, Iowa, to collect the pollen and analyze it. They're looking for evidence of neonicotinoids, insecticides found in the coatings on most corn and soybean seeds. Researcher Mary Harris says when corn is planted, dust vented from the planter may contain residue from the seed coating. And Harris has found the pollen bees collect can contain some of those toxins.
The highest concentrations were detected in the pollen that was collected the week of planting.
The chemicals kill grubs, aphids, and beetles, not bees. Harris says the levels of insecticides in the pollen diminish after planting. Still, the exposure hurts.
They're not as able to carry out the various functions that are going to set the hive up to have a really healthy, successful season.
And that may lead to higher overwinter losses. Coated seeds are easy for farmers to use, and Harris says they can be an important part of an integrated pest management system. Some home gardening products even contain neonicotinoids. But
some of the aspects that make these such good chemicals may also be creating some environmental problems.
And the bee situation is dire. Over the past 8 years, nearly a third of all bees nationwide died annually. Beekeepers say some losses are routine, but the recent levels are jeopardizing the entire population.
So Eric's right now, he's actually pulling in beans, getting ready to treat them.
At Plunkett Seeds in Maxwell, Iowa, Gary Plunkett and his son Eric send plain yellowish-beige soybean seeds into a treatment chamber. They add a dull pink liquid and set the machine in motion. The seeds bounce and dance in a flow of air that sprays on the treatment.
It comes out tacky, but it's not like it's dripping wet.
Plunkett can sell soybean seeds with or without the coating he's putting on, but he says most customers want it. All of his corn seed comes to him already treated. Farmers have used insecticides on their crops for decades, so Plunkett is skeptical that these seed coatings are now killing bees.
It's an easy escape for the bee, or I wouldn't say the bee people, but it is an easy escape for ag, because just like the carryover of chemicals and stuff, it's easy to blame the farmer.
Scapegoating or not, the European Union has put a 2-year ban on certain neonicotinoids, and DuPont Pioneer is selling corn and soybean seeds without the toxins in Canada.
Even though we wish we could blame a single factor, we really can't.
Iowa State entomologist Amy Toth says even if neonicotinoids completely disappeared, bees would still be in trouble.
The corn dust could be having an impact on some hives in some situations. It's not explaining the whole collapse of the beekeeping industry.
Figuring out what's killing bees, Toth says, is important to preserving the way we all eat. Corn and soybean crops don't rely on bees and other pollinators, but most fruits and vegetables do.
Without bees, the cost of our food would go up dramatically. We wouldn't starve to death without bees, but we would have a lot less variety in our diets, and the cost of food would go up a lot.
There is some good news for pollinators. USDA has made money available to help farmers create bee habitat on conservation land. Cover crops, which have been regaining popularity for a variety of reasons in the Corn Belt, can provide quality food for pollinators. And bee deaths this past winter were lower than they have been in years, but not yet low enough to reverse the trend. Amy Mayer, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media is a reporting collaboration focused on issues of food, fuel, and field. More about them at harvestpublicmedia.org.
Yeah, actually, those two gray boys like to fight. They're brothers.
Ooh, and there they go.
Yeah. They're, it's funny to watch an alpaca fight because they mostly just wrestle with their necks.
If you've never seen an alpaca, they are all neck and all legs with tiny, tiny, tiny little bodies.
Yes. A lot of people confuse them with llamas, but they're in the same family. They're camelids.
Back again at the White Violet Center with Candace Minster.
That's the sound they make.
That's Theo and Apollo making all the ruckus. There are about 40 alpacas at the White Violet Center, separated in various pastures throughout the grounds. They're raised for sales, breeding, and fiber production, and their manure is vital to the agricultural program. We made our way into a pasture with the two troublemakers and a very curious alpaca named Madison.
So Madison, you'll want to watch him. Because he likes to jump on your back.
Jump on my back? Okay.
Potentially.
Just don't turn your back on him and you're fine. Having the alpacas makes the White Violet Center a good model of sustainability, according to Minster.
Most organic farmers live and die by compost and manures, and so you can purchase that from off-farm or you can make your own.
The alpacas produce plenty of manure for Minster and her team to use on the crops. When Sister Ann Sullivan was forming her vision of the White Violet Center, she wanted to incorporate animals that wouldn't be slaughtered for food. Having grown up on a farm herself, Sullivan wasn't fond of sheep. Alpacas seemed to fit the bill, so in 1998, they accepted a donation of their first six animals.
So you didn't necessarily need a lot of them. You could get started with just a few. They're pretty easy on the pasture because they have a soft foot. They don't tear up the ground. They do produce an income for us through their fiber. They are...
They just won't stop. We're doing a radio interview.
Yeah. I mean, it really is just like kids.
They're doing hot laps around the pen here.
They are.
No alpacas were harmed in the taping of this interview with Candace Minster at the White Violet Center. What a magical place. See photos of the gardens and of the very adorable Madison the alpaca at eartheats.org. Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible, including Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Luann Johnson, Liz Leslie, Candace Minster, Daniel Orr, Betsy Shepherd, Rose Hayden-Smith, and everyone at Harvest Public Media. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street, bloomingfoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. At the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness, massage and yoga. More at touchstonewellness.com. And Bloomington Hypnosis, with certified hypnotist and self-hypnosis instructor John Hunkler, helping clients relax into weight loss for health and fitness. Bloomington Hypnosis, 812-200-5005. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Will Murphy, executive producer. Have a great week of eating and growing. Thanks for tuning in this week. I'm Annie Corrigan.